In this episode of The Critical Myth, the Critical Myth crew covers a surprise announcement from San Diego Comic-Con, discuss Dragon Con preparations, gets tripped up by covert affairs, and locks down the last ship. It's episode 471, Return to Babylon.
Actually going now, which is better than we've been for the last half hour, as this is show 471 of The Critical Myth, as our opening hopefully said. Hey, so who do I have here with me today? I think I know at least one person who's helping me record.
Yeah, it's Edmund from Greenville, and yes, the little mice are running around their wheel and seem to be doing the right thing.
And this is Gary from Jacksonville. Just because one person's sick does not mean everyone is sick.
I guess so. I'm going to blame this little glitch on either trying to share information about person of interest, and Samaritan did not like that very much, or possibly Ebola. Either one. I don't care. Or it could just be that we got this news that apparently... Oh, Gary, I think you can explain it better. I guess there's some kind of movie that may be coming in the next couple of years that just completely threw the entire internet into a tizzy.
Movie coming out next week. The Civil War movie?
I was thinking more along the lines of a certain station. Space station in particular.
Oh, yes. I mean, there's been a lot of movie news. And I had heard the leak of the Marvel Next Avengers movie possibly being the Civil War storyline. So on newer, slightly less concrete news, yes, JMS over at San Diego Comic-Con announced that he will be penning a Babylon 5 movie. He does hold the rights to them. Warner Brothers does not hold them, but he is hoping to work with them. And I'm not sure how licensing works in that case, but he will start penning it. He has mentioned that without too much groaning that it will be a reboot. He will try and include some of the original actors. I get the sense that it will be more of a cameo than an actual character position. However, again, he really hasn't gone into it yet or given us any other hints besides that. He particularly mentioned Bruce Boxleitner or perhaps being the Earth Alliance president, which I hope it's not Clark. And so we just sort of have to wait and see. And he also addressed this very trepidation that we had when we hear the word reboot, especially for a series that everyone on this show loves dearly. And he basically said, we see J.J. Abrams remaking movies and people don't like what he's done with them. And he just responded that he is not them. and if you've ever listened to any of JMS's actual interviews or conversations, I can hear the tone with which he typed that. And I found it oddly reassuring. After all, this is not handing over the franchise to another person. It's still in the hands of the person that created it from the wellspring of his mind in a shower with possibly Dacius. And so I'm not worried. I will miss the original cast, although we have lost several key members of that cast. So to keep it together might have been somewhat difficult. It's not enjoying the luxury that other movie franchises such as Star Trek had, where you were able to use the entire cast for a significant period of time. So while I am saddened to hear a reboot, I am not worried about it. How about you guys? I'm sure everybody squealed very much about hearing about this, but when you hear some of the facts such as, trying to bankroll it himself and Warner Brothers not being involved and the cast not coming with the movie, the original cast at least, what were your thoughts?
Yeah, well, certainly after the all of the anticipation and dashed hopes we've had over the past 10, 15 years or so, I'm pleased at the news, but I'm just being sort of cautiously optimistic because at this point, all it is that yes, he is going to write the script, and then we have to see in terms of actually getting it through to production. So I wasn't exactly shouting the news from the rooftops, but I am certainly compared to the Memory of Shadows debacle. Given the position that JMS has gotten to in the business, I am more cautiously optimistic now than I was back then. So,
well, what it sounds like to me is that let's go back and look at what he said before. He was saying that essentially he would not do anything more in this universe until he had the budget available, or at least the means to get the budget to do it. And he was kind of counting on the WB to step up to the plate and make it happen. And he even went so far as to at least get started on a reboot series concept for an online distribution type of format, from what I recall. And it fell through. So I'm wondering if this just means that based on his cachet from everything else that he's been doing, that he has a fairly high degree of probability that he can get the budget he's looking for independent of the WB. And that's what it sounds like right now. And what he's basically doing, at least in my mind, is kind of throwing an ultimatum out to them, like you were saying, Gary, that he's going to write the script. He's got alternative investors that he could go with if he had to. But the fact of the matter is that anyone who's intelligent enough to do any type of business is going to say, we want to be able to capitalize on this. And the only people who are going to really be able to capitalize on it beyond the immediate investors would be the WB. So why wouldn't they go with this? Because this would be the perfect opportunity for them to relaunch stuff. That, I mean, basically, we know why they wouldn't do it, because they're complete idiots, which has been revealed many times before.
Yes.
I don't know. I'm curious to see what happens, because given how much of a hard line he put on this before, I don't see him spending time putting something together if he didn't feel like it was going to be worthwhile.
Well, don't forget, too, there is a big science fiction property coming back to the movies soon. And, you know, much like when Paramount brought back Star Trek as a result of this other franchise, you know, coming to popularity, this maybe Warner Brothers wants a science fiction show as the new Star Wars rolls out.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's quite possible. And we'll see what happens. I know that there was a lot of discussion about this among the fandom. Many people that, at least in my mind, are perhaps not being very open-minded about it, but more along the lines of most of them want to see more Babylon 5, but some of them are perhaps not looking at the big picture in terms of what that would need to be. It is a little bit unfortunate, just to address the other question that you asked about, you know, why can't it be the people that were involved before? But at least in my mind, we're now 15 plus years since we've had anything substantial out of the universe. We had the Lost Tales, but that I feel is an aberration more than anything as far as really continuation. And it's hard to say when half of your cast, unfortunately, is dead, that you're going to continue on with what you've got, because all that really does is either force a mixing of casts between old cast members plus replacement cast members. It's never going to happen. Or you're going to then constrain JMS to write something in only a certain time period with certain people, the ones that are available and still alive, and now your storytelling options and your ability to be more fluid with what you do in order to recoup the investment that's going to go into it, kind of becomes almost a killing blow to the whole thing right from the start. Because ultimately, if he wants a movie that's going to have a budget of $70 to $80 million, the only way you're going to get that money back is not from just Babylon 5 fans.
Yeah,
you need more people going to the theater, and they're not going to go if it's some super continuity wank type of plot thing that really is just inaccessible as all hell. The example that I would give, and I know that this is probably slightly controversial to some people, is Serenity. Yes, did they try to make it something that was accessible to new viewers? As much as could possibly be done, when the entire intent is to kind of finish off something that happened in a TV show with 13 episodes. So was it something that was designed more for the fans than for a broad audience? Yes. And look what happened. The fans went and saw it. No one else did.
Yeah.
Because no one knew what the hell it was. So for me, it's like you can't have a Babylon 5 film introduction and be shackled by the continuity that already exists. You have to come at it from another angle. And what that angle is going to be, hey, he's the one who's, you know, writing the script and gets paid the big money. He can figure that out. But I completely understand why he does not really have a lot of concern over the reaction or the demands of a reboot and what that means. I mean, obviously, he's really not troubled by the idea. What do you think? I mean, would you agree, disagree, Gary? Or what's
your take on that? Honestly, sentimentality aside, he's got to make a movie that's going to appeal to people, like you said, and it can't be a fanboy dream. While I'm still hoping it has winks and nods in there for the longtime fan, it's just not going to work. I agree with you. It's too old a property and too on the edge. While it was a small cult hit, it never enjoyed crazy ratings, and I'm not going to get into why, and it had nothing to do with the quality of the story or the actors. It didn't, and so there's not enough broad base appeal to stay into it. At that like ultra fanboy level. I mean, even the original Star Trek movies, I would not say were self-referential or anything along those lines. They had to stand on their own merits. Other than the actual characters themselves being known. And so Babylon 5 is going to be the same way. This new movie has to stand on its own, and that's going to mean, not including some things. And it'll mean, hopefully, really including new things too, because even the diehard fans want new material. I don't want to see everything that I've seen before. I know it. I know it very well, but I don't need to see it again. So while I would like a few referrals back, but no, I'm perfectly fine with it hitting new territory.
Yeah, how about you, Evan?
Yeah, and I just wanted to reiterate, I mean, certainly on the casting front, just even aside from the deaths, it is 20 years on, and when Memory of Shadows was being proposed about 10 years ago, I mean, I think, they were still within that window of where the original cast could come back and reasonably step back into the roles, but certainly I think those of us who've been to the reunions, it is that thing of time marches on, and there is a reason why JMS does mention Box Leitner, because he is one of the cast members who is still active and working regularly, but some of the others, even the Peter Jurassic is one that springs to mind, has essentially retired. Jerry Doyle, of course, is off doing his radio show, and although amazingly on the female side of the cast, most of them seem to have found a fountain of youth somewhere. Because certainly,
hoping he could write a part for Pat Tallman.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, Pat Tallman, and Claudia Christian as well. I mean, but both look like they could step back in, but it did become obvious at the reunions that some of our hopes, and even JMS's hope of giving the original cast a nice fat feature film payday, just wasn't realistic anymore. But I do like that he is at least going to try and work in as many as he can, and whichever way it's done in terms of cameos, or if he's doing a bit of a flashback structure, so we're seeing them in the original cast members as older versions of themselves, and then they go back to how that story began or something like that. It was a few years ago that I first started realizing all of those hopes of seeing them all reunited was probably getting less and less realistic, and so one of those things that we'd hope for, but I'm more than ready to let go of it and hope we see the best possible product, and even better is if he really can come up with something that does have the broader appeal, and maybe finally gets B5 a little more notoriety.
Well, the one thing I guess that I'm really curious about is that and we've talked about this quite a few times, at least for me, the biggest draw of Babylon 5 as a series was the long form narrative.
Yeah.
That isn't going to translate directly into a film.
No.
And I think we've all kind of had our reservations a little bit about the quality of the TV movies that were made. But again, there we were stuck between every TV movie felt like it had to be some big thing in order to continue to maybe expose or reveal mysteries about the universe. And when it didn't do that, it was a little bit disappointing. And even when it did try to expand things, it was always very abortive, unfortunately. Here we're talking about a clean slate. So I think a lot of the speculation about who's going to wind up being the Sinclair Sheridan role and all this kind of stuff. In the back of my mind, I'm thinking we could go into this film thinking we know exactly what is going to happen, and it could be radically different, because unless he's trying to set up a 10-film series, which is completely unrealistic, we're talking maybe what? Think back to original Star Wars trilogy, a movie that can start off a story but can also stand on its own.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to have to be completely different. Either it's going to have to be incredibly fast-paced, or it's going to have to simplify things down, or it's just going to be a different story. So I don't know. The more that I divorce myself from what the original series was and just consider that to be kind of a closed chapter, I'm very intrigued to see what they do with this. And at the very least, this may wind up being a footnote in a future Babylon 5 books project. But, to me, again, and he wouldn't be announcing anything if he didn't have the investors pretty much already waiting in the wings. He's got more than enough to do. He doesn't need to do this at all. So, yeah, it's exciting to me. I mean, it's definitely, I thought, worth bringing up, especially since, as you said, Gary, we've got kind of like a renaissance right now of a lot of these franchises and everything else. I mean, Star Trek, quibbles aside about some the direction that they've taken for among some fans, but it's pretty much been revived. We've got Star Wars coming back, and I mean,
in space, yeah, and how.
Yeah, and how. And we've got a Marvel Cinematic Universe that is, by all accounts, completely dominating the superhero side of things at the moment. We're not, unfortunately, going to be able to talk about Guardians of the Galaxy right away, as it's just not in the scheduling cards right now. But I haven't seen this kind of buzz about one of the Marvel movies since The Avengers, and I'm kind of shocked by that. So who knows what that's going to wind up doing. But certainly that's not going away anytime soon. And, of course, DC is trying their best to kind of play match and set on that. But we've just got some amazing genre franchises out there, and I see no reason why Babylon 5 shouldn't stand among the giants out there, because it certainly, reputation-wise, has more than enough clout for that. And certainly we feel very strongly about Babylon 5 here. Obviously, since we spent quite a bit of time talking about it. But while we're on the subject of things outside of our usual TV things, Gary, have you been up to anything new lately?
Let's see, since our last show. No, I did mention I had seen the Lucy movie. That was enjoyable. I'm still plowing through Game of Thrones, the series that will never end, as I refer to it. I'm halfway through. Which book is it? Storm of Swords? No.
Book three?
Yes, book three.
Yes, that's Storm of Swords. Yes.
Storm of Swords, which is nice because I'm now getting past, I'm starting to loop over the existing storyline from HBO. So I'm starting to see the future now, which is nice.
Yes.
at least some of it. So that's good. And no, that's been about it. I'm going to see Guardians of the Galaxy this weekend, so I'll be current on that. And I'm doing some costume prep for the Dragon Con convention. So,
anything that you want to announce now, or you want to leave it open until a future show?
I'll leave it open because there's one I'm not sure that's going to happen, but I'm working hard to try and make it. So, sewing is not my strong suit by any means, and I'm still trying to. So.
Yes, I'm sure I'll get into that in a moment. How about you, Edmund? What have you been up to?
Well, I also have not quite gotten to Guardians of the Galaxy yet, but I'm very much looking forward to it. And we kind of are in a sort of dog days of summer. So I think things have been a little slow, but some nice hanging out on the porches with adult beverages happening every now and then. And one thing that started up this week, and I actually didn't realize that they were starting quite this soon, but the Almighty Johnsons has finally started on Sci-Fi, and I actually did already get my hands on the episodes from when they were first broadcast in New Zealand, but it is a very fun show, and odd thing is, unlike their Canadian acquisitions, this is actually a case of where it took them a while to get the rights and then start broadcasting it. So in fact, this is a case where there are three seasons and that's it, and it has already completely finished in New Zealand. And I did kind of regret it coming to Sci-Fi this late, because I was hoping if they managed to start showing it while it was still being broadcast in New Zealand, that it might have given it some buzz to maybe allow them to continue. But New Zealand TV runs quite a bit differently than the way things do here. So even them getting three seasons was quite an accomplishment. I think actually after season two, they were just about pretty much canceled, and the fan outcry actually did bring them back for season three. But other nice thing about the show is that they really did show a lot of growth and development in those three seasons. So if anybody has started picking it up and is thinking, you know, well, wait a minute, this seems like it's just using being reincarnated as Norse gods as an excuse to have bros bonding over beer and broads, it does get a little more twisty and intriguing than that. So it's definitely a fun summer type series.
Cool. I'd seen the ads for it, but never quite got around to picking it up. So maybe if there's a little bit of time. I'm still behind on a few other shows that were supposed to be catching up on this summer anyway. Let's see.
I forgot one thing, John.
Oh, go ahead.
I'm surprised nobody else mentioned it, but I realize that it is summer, but when it's something of this importance, I can't believe no one else has brought it up too. Sharknado 2 aired this week.
You don't say.
Did you see it?
I did.
How could you miss it?
No.
You did not?
I couldn't handle it. It was too much for me.
Okay. You know when I know what you mean, because I reached that same point. I reached that same point when Robert Hayes was the pilot of the airplane. At that point, I just lost it. I started laughing hysterically. I fell out of my couch. I couldn't catch my breath. Mm-hmm. And my wife said to me that it's not that funny. And I said, yes, it is.
Yes.
Oh, and thankfully, he ordered the chicken. Which I know almost no one possibly got that reference, mm-hmm. but it made me start laughing all over again.
Yes.
Because whoever ate the chicken was okay.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
It was the fish. Mm. Get the fish.
Yes, but please tell me he did try to drink something.
No, unfortunately not. It ended there, but I thought the chicken was so much of an in reference,
yes.
I couldn't get much more greedy than that.
Yeah,
so,
exactly.
But yeah, I don't think it quite lived up to the original. I know, but because it set the bar so high, it was still rather entertaining. And if you thought the first one was tongue in cheek, this one was even more so.
Oh, I'm sure that it was tongue right through the side of the cheek and around to the other side.
Yeah, right when Will Wheaton's head got knocked off. Literally.
I'm sure. I'm sure there's no exaggeration. No, sadly, I did not catch Sharknado 2. I feel deprived of this cultural moment, but there
this
we are.
This is a touchstone, John. You know what
it
I'm
is.
Saying?
It is. I'm going to regret it for the rest of my days. Almost as much as I'm going to regret the fact. No, I'm joking. It wasn't quite that bad, but I guess of course, my daughter being off for the summer and one of the few times she's actually home, not at camp or anything like that, we managed to watch that movie Divergent that came out. It wasn't nearly as bad as I thought it was going to be.
Wow, there's high praise. Yeah.
It just didn't look that interesting, but it turned out to have, despite the fact that I feel like the general premise is a little bit overly contrived, it went in places I didn't expect it to, and it was enjoyable on that level. And my wife actually was inspired enough to read essentially the entire trilogy in the past week. And by her own estimation, she has absolutely no idea how they're going to film the other two movies because they go in some pretty extreme places. So, okay, I'll take her word for it. I've got many other things to read in the meantime, but it was not a bad bad thing to watch, especially in the summer. Hey, it wasn't Twilight, let's put it that way. I've been playing an awful lot of Mass Effect 3, at least when I am not stymied by glitches, as I was earlier this evening. But I'm a good way through that. I'm almost sure I'm past the two-thirds point, maybe even three-quarters. It's funny, there were some people, just to kind of circle back to our first topic tonight, who compared it to Babylon 5 in some of its potential source material, or at least source inspirations, and I definitely get that feeling at the moment as I'm getting close to the end of the trilogy. So, yes, it's been a lot of fun. And there was something else that I was going to bring. Oh, yes, the aforementioned other time sink, which has been preparations for Dragon Con, which are in full swing. I can safely say that at this point I'm pretty much good with my Edward Kenway Assassin's costume. And that's pretty good. And I have another one that is actually based on Attack on Titan that I just need to make some adjustments to, some minor adjustments. So those two I'm very sure of. There's a third that is a bit more ambitious that I'm still working on. So we'll see. I'll play the same card that Gary did, and I'll get more into it as time allows. But I don't want to start being Travis on Under Sedation Live and spending 20 minutes talking about the travails of trying to put my Dragon Con costumes together. Sorry, throwing a little shade at Travis. But anyway, all right, now that we're through that, and to move on, Edmund, I think that before we actually talk about episodic content, we usually have some kind of disclaimer.
Yes, we do. Our policy here is to talk about just about anything that might have happened in the episode, so we have to warn you that you will be spoiled. Try and leave at least a week or so before we do that, so we certainly hope you've had a chance to catch up.
That's right. And Gary, why don't you go ahead and take the honors of the first choice? What would you like to discuss?
I will go with my favorite show. I don't deny it. Let's talk about Covert Affairs.
All right, and let's go ahead and run a promo while we all get over the shock of Gary's choice.
Annie, you're on the next flight to Paris.
I didn't expect to hear from you again.
We need to figure out if Ivan Kravitz is behind the Chicago attack.
You like being mysterious. Are you going to vanish again?
I might stick around.
Covert Affairs, an all-new episode next Tuesday at 10 on...
All right, and if you could do the honors?
Absolutely. We're speaking about Covert Affairs, Season 5, Episode 6, Embassy Row. Annie accepts an invitation to the Russian embassy with Kravik while undercover in Paris. Elsewhere, Augie juggles his relationships with Haley and Natasha, and Joan unravels the details of Arthur's latest business trip.
Okay. And what would you give this one?
I would give this one a 7.
All right. And how about you, Edmund?
I will go 7.5.
All right, and I also went with a 7.5. So, surprisingly, I mean, Gary usually is the leading edge at the top of the scale when it comes to Covert Affairs, but this is easily, Gary, your lowest scored episode of the season. Why would you say that this was pretty much an average episode?
Because Annie became the damsel in distress again, and I've never cared for the role personally. I think it's a weakening of the character, and they worked so hard to sort of push her away from that this whole... drugging and having McQuaid have to come to her rescue, not so much as a partner, but literally as like that white knight. And I just don't care for the trope. I didn't care for it much in the earlier seasons when they would pull it out with Ayal or anybody else, you know, coming in like this. So I didn't care for it. Once again, I don't mind it if it's like a partnership, if she's working with somebody, but you know, she really wasn't working with him in this instance. So it just, it just seemed like, oh, poor Annie. Oh, she's got somebody to save her. And I just don't care for it. That was probably my biggest issue. And my other minor quibble was Arthur going back to work for the CIA after he had to leave under a shadow of shame. So they're going to bring him right back into work in heavily classified areas. Seems a little shaky to me.
Edmund, what would you add to that then? At least as far as Annie's characterization is concerned.
Yeah, that certainly was the biggest disappointment. Even the attempts to make her a little more active than she's been in the past, where she really does put up a fight. She actually does get knock him out and gets out of the office, but then, playing that whole her passing out with McQuaid there, and then waking up again. And he's nowhere to be seen, and then as Gary said, just coming out of the woodwork to save her was quite disappointing. The one part I haven't really touched on was the yeah the, then now now the thing with Augie and setting up this triangle and with Haley investigating them, so he's got to keep him, he can't break it off with her, he's got to keep it up and basically be essentially spying on her. And I will give them minor points for him being upfront about it with Natasha, not trying to play that whole very silly trope of keeping up with both of them and trying to juggle them with the and keeping them in both of them in the dark. But it was still kind of akin to when we've complained about them setting them up with other people to just keep Annie and Augie from getting together. And while they've moved beyond that, having this rather conventional triangle set up again just didn't feel like the boldest choice there.
Yeah, I was a little bit taken by that myself, but I'm wondering if the intent wasn't to try and say that all of this stuff going on with Augie and the distractions and everything else wasn't somehow putting Annie off of her game as well, because they made a lot about the fact that Annie and Augie have been this really good team and that together they've done, better than they had when they were apart and all this kind of stuff. And Joan made a very big point about that. In fact, such a big point that it was kind of hypocritical of her to say it. But then we have this episode where while Augie is still backing her to some degree, he's clearly not, or shall I say, she's not the most important thing in his mind at all this episode. And even if Haley is not some kind of mole for the postman or any of that stuff, she's coming at them from a completely different angle, and she's an even more justified angle, for that matter. And we just keep seeing this theme, which is probably the thing that kept the episode going for me, which is the unintended consequences of the choices that they've been making just coming to haunt them in so many ways, because, Annie and her heart condition and the decisions that she made previously with Ivan kind of coming back and hitting her this time around, her decisions with Augie coming back and hurting her because she was so kind of guarded about what's going on her end. And you've got Arthur keeping secrets and it's coming back on him because he didn't have to lie to Joan, but he did. And there goes that whole theory that they're in on something together against mm-hmm. McQuaid, I guess. But it's so typical for this show to throw out those kinds of red herrings that we just can't help but bite on. At least I can't. But there were some thematic things going on that I liked about this episode, but there was so much relationship stuff. And once again, the stuff with Calder, which just feels like it's out of nowhere or overemphasized. And then along the way, like you said, Gary, we had Annie not being nearly as proactive as she has been in the last couple seasons. But anything else that we want to say about this episode? Are we leaving anything out?
No, I think we hit most of the major bases. Yeah, I still don't understand the Calder relationship. That it almost feels like they needed to give the actor something to do. I guess he was popular enough last season that they needed to give him a storyline and couldn't think of one. So that's vexing. Having Augie sort of having to play these two women seems a little bit odd. I think that would be too much of a challenge for a blind man. Maybe I'm being stereotypical, but I would I would think that would be a very difficult thing for a blind man to pull off. So that seems a little hokey. We still are getting a little bit more of Annie's past times, or at least questionings of it, as Haley starts to mention to Augie that that the investigation is getting deeper and more serious, and that he needs to distance himself. So, again, it's ratcheting up the tension for what she did while she was gone. Obviously, it's more than we think. So I'm glad that they are pursuing that. But at the same time, as you said, John, there's these outer, the plot holes, like the Arthur Joan dynamic that we thought was going somewhere, and now we don't think it is. The Calder thing, and even Augie sort of pulling this off. Annie seeming almost as a minor character in her own show. So I feel the focus is a little off, and it should be more Annie-centric, and I'm saying that with a straight face.
Okay. Anything else, Edmund, on this one?
No, I think we've pretty much covered it.
All right, then. Well, then, as we had been doing for the last couple episodes, we're going to go ahead and take a little bit of a detour now and go into at least one or a couple of the quick hits here. And actually, I'm going to skip the first ones on the list and go right down here to Falling Skies, Season 4, Episode 6, Door Number 3. Tom reunites with his family in the second mass, but the reunion celebration is cut short when Lexi falls victim to a health crisis, as in becoming a butterfly. Anyway, yes. Before long, her illness stirs up tension within the ranks as family members clash over how best to treat her. Yeah, all right. Well, Gary, what would you happen to catch this one?
Yes.
And what would you give it?
Six.
All right, and how about you, Edmund?
Yeah, I was leaning towards a six as well.
Yeah, I'm going to go there as well. Yeah, so speaking of things that may be inspired slightly by Babylon 5.
I was going to say, medical condition? She's in a cocoon!
Yes. Yeah, she's in a cocoon, and, I'm sure that all of us with a certain amount of tongue-in-cheekness were wondering if she was going to be coming back with a bone on her head.
Mm-hmm.
But regardless, yeah, I don't know. This
They have been mentioning hybrid till we want to throw up on the term. So it doesn't surprise me that she might come out slight as Fenny. So we'll see. But yeah, I thought that was odd considering we've never seen any cocoon at all.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, except, the one of the consistent things about this show is that they have been more than happy to just completely rejigger what the aliens are and how they operate for four seasons now. So.
Minor details. I don't see what the problem is. Oh, no, I disagree. I see exactly what the problem is, but there we are. Believe it or not, the season is still trending a little bit better than the previous season, which says more about the previous season than it does this season, at least in my mind. All right, well, let's go ahead then and veer away from that into hopefully better material and go back to another major topic. And Edmund, I believe it is your turn this time.
Sure, let's talk about the last ship.
All right, and here's the promo.
Next Sunday, the last ship is all new.
Your captain's hiding something from me.
And their greatest fear...
The disease is not spreading anywhere!
...becomes their worst nightmare.
Sir!
I have a pretty strong feeling that this whole thing is going to fail.
The Last Ship, all new TNT next Sunday at 9. Or watch on demand.
All right, and if you could do the recap.
Certainly. This is The Last Ship, Season 1, Episode 6, Lockdown. Panic spreads when Danny Green catches a mysterious illness that might be the virus. Doubts rise about Rachel and her failing vaccine trials as Chandler deals with a crew whose uneasy state grows.
All right. And Gary, you watch the show?
Yes, I do. Yeah.
Yes? Okay. And what would you give this one?
I would give it an 8.5.
An 8.5, okay. And how about you, Edmund?
I think I will go with an 8.
8. All right. And I would go with an 8 as well. All right. Well, Edmund, why don't you go ahead and get us started on this one?
Yeah. I think with this one, to a certain extent, the Danny catching becoming ill, and then as the title says, that lockdown getting imposed, was feeling a little conventional, but I think what really raised this one for me was what was happening in the aftermath of all that, that whole thread with all the members of the crew who they have not been keeping in the loop, and the way the rumors start spreading and people them seeing the doctor getting rid of the failed vaccine trials and having to dump the monkeys overboard and the way they then wound up dealing with that and taking it head on and taking down the wall basically that wall of silence that had been creating all of that conflict was I like the way that played out. And even if the part at the very end when they've been given the option to leave the ship and having served out their term, certainly didn't seem like the most enticing prospect anyway. But having them all there and reenlisting may have been a little bit predictable, but I still thought it was nicely played.
Yeah, it was a little predictable, and frankly, I think that was one of the few things that kind of was in the back of my mind in this episode, and why I didn't quite give it a higher mark. It felt a little cliche. It reminded me a little bit of the occasional scene that you get on a show like NCIS, where it devolves into what some people call military porn, mm-hmm. which is like, you know, just let's talk about how awesome it is to be part of the armed forces kind of thing, right? Let's ignore the fact that for the most part, the reaction here in the situation is more that this is literally the best place for them to be right now. it shouldn't be dawning on them at all that, or it should never have been a question that if the person who's working on the cure is right there on your own ship, maybe it's a good idea to be there. Because guess who's going to be probably the first ones to get the cure? You, because you're on the ship. But that was probably the weirdest thing that I was kind of struggling with, which was, wait, so they've been on this ship for how long, and the plague has now been revealed and everything else, and yet they still didn't know what the doctor was doing? I'm a little taken aback by that. They resolved it by the end of the episode, which was fine, but it took the crisis of somebody getting dengue fever for all this stuff to come up. Am I misinterpreting this, Gary, or what were your thoughts on that?
Yeah, John, you're way off. Anyway, and I just to go back just a hint. I have a friend or two who were active duty Navy for 15 plus years, and I asked them, I said, oh, are you watching this show? Now, of course, some people don't want to revisit their past and stuff like that, so I wasn't sure how close it was. But one of my friends said she'd give it a watch, and she had started – went back, saw this, started to watch this episode, and then went back and saw every other episode. She loved it. She felt it was reasonably accurate as far as military goes. And she says – and I asked her about the corny ceremony at the end too, and they said, you know, given the circumstances, they might not have, but it still could have happened on a ship. It might. And they said, because a lot of people, you forget, they are dedicating their lives to this country and to the Navy, and it may seem a little hokey to someone not in it, but to people who spend their lives doing this and sacrifice themselves in many cases, this it's very important to them. And while it might have been slightly overdone, it was, that's all it was slightly, and that these sort of little bits of patriotism and things like this do happen and are important. And I don't believe any of us, myself included, have ever been active military, but as I talked to my friend who was for 18 years, she said, yeah, no, this, it's not as far off as you think. So I wanted to just put that little preface on that ceremony that I agree too. I thought was a bit cornball, and no, it's not. So I just wanted to put that into perspective, and I was glad to convert somebody over to this show as well. So, to move a little forward, they had a speech about that, I think, with all the officers in the wardroom, how they weren't telling all the rank and file enlisted personnel what was going on. They had hints and clues, but you know, they didn't know how far along they were with a cure. They didn't know, you know, what stage they were at. All they knew that a cure was being tested. And then to combine that with them being told they're headed back, that a cure is imminent, I believe might have been the exact phrase. So when that didn't pan through, I thought it was really nice that they did come through honestly and let everyone on the ship know the status. I thought they were going to lie, cover it up, come up with some crazy deception. And I refreshingly enjoyed the captain's honesty. To me, it was nice because while it wasn't good news, I felt it was a positive thing that everyone's telling the truth and keeping lines of communication open. You know, they're all good things. And you know, as we see these shows, especially shows like this, well, the topic being this sort of worldwide plague, you know, the shows become so dark and people become so closed up and, you know, tight-lipped and everything like that. It's nice to see that they're able to, you know, stay open and optimistic, or at least positive, and not everyone shutting themselves down. So I like it. In a way, the show is staying very positive in a bleak situation. You know, as you said, this is the place to be, not just for the cure, but honestly, I think the living conditions are, even with the limited space that I'm sure they have aboard that, I think it might be a frigate, that it's still better than living out in a disease-laden world. So, you know, it's good there, and I like the camaraderie, the openness. It feels positive in a bad situation.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, I've said it before, and I'll continue to say it. This right now is probably the most consistently good show on the airwaves right now, or at least one of the top shows on the airwaves right now, and that's surprising to me, but perhaps it shouldn't have been when you get right down to it. Anything you want to add on this one, Edmund?
No, I don't think so.
All right, then we are going to go ahead and wrap this particular episode up, and we will continue in our next show with the rest of this week's list, so see you then.
And so ends another epic episode of The Critical Myth. If you want to leave a comment for this show, head over to vognetwork.com. Not only can you find links to the podcast version of each show, but there is a dedicated forum, a ton of written reviews, and related articles by the crew throughout the site. For the written reviews, you can even leave your own review, so let us know if you agree or not. You can also leave comments on our Facebook page, Critical Myth, on Twitter at Critical Myth, or Google Plus under The Critical Myth Show. Any and all use of copyrighted material is only intended for discussion, commentary, parody, or educational purposes, in accordance with U.S. Code Title 17, also known as fair use. In other words, please don't sue us. And of course, the statements and opinions of the Critical Myth crew are not necessarily those of the VOG network, its partners, or affiliates. But let's face it, we're probably right anyway. Until next time, watch, read, and listen, and believe in the critical myth.